This episode of WDW Today is brought to you by Off to Neverland Travel. If you know about us, you know about them, a great travel agency. If you want to plan your next vacation, go visit their website. Go to neverland.com. Get all the plans you need. Get with a magic maker. They're going to hook you up. They'll help you plan your days, help you with your fast passes, help you with reservations. It's great. Make sure to visit their website again at goToNeverland.com. And heck, you can even become a magic maker. And as Will likes to say,
all you got to do is pack.
All you got to do is pack at goToNeverland.com. And now, on with the show.
Give me a little intro there, Gomer.
Bringing the world to your world. This is WDW Today, coming to you from somewhere off property at the Laugh-O-Gram Studios, featuring Len Testa and the greatest band in podcasting, Off Kilter. Now here they are, Terry Weaver, the nature boy Will Haynes, and your host, Logan Seculo.
All right, this special episode of WDW Today was recorded live at De Las Puertas Magic Media Music Festival. So you're going to hear that first, and then after that, we're going to go to Terry's trip report from Disneyland Paris. So again, first half, live show, second half, done here in the studio. We'll do the rest of Terry's trip report. And take it away, myself. It's Friday, September 30th, and this is episode 1533 of WDW Today, live at De Las Puertas Magic Media and Music Festival. Yay! Yippee. Today is special. We've already heard from amazing acts, guys. The British Invasion, how are they? Return to Zero, formerly Four for a Dollar, which makes us the cast of Beauty and the Beast, which is nice. And then obviously later on in the night, coming up next, American Martian Mulch, formerly Mulch Sweat and Cheers. And wrapping our night up, headlining the night, Off Kilter. Well, sorry podcast listeners, you don't get to hear all that amazing music because I'm not paying for the licensing. But we are going to talk to a very special guest, and that is Mr. Ron Schneider. You guys have known him probably your entire lives for a lot of you guys as either the Dream Finder or your many other roles within theme park culture. But Ron, thank you so much for coming out and meeting people during our pre-show and having fun.
Thank you. Thanks for inviting me.
Sorry.
Very good.
Sorry. Comes back on me every so often.
Awesome. What do you think about it? And by the way, if you guys have questions, raise your hand. We'll come find you. Or yell. I don't care. Q&A time. So for you, for the Dreamfinder, this character that has been somewhat out of the parks other than through merchandise for a number of years now, why do you feel like this character lives on? And why is it important for you to somewhat for it to live on?
Because of what he stood for back in the day that he was still standing. Epcot, of course, was an inspiration park, and central to that was the process of creativity and imagination, explore all the different aspects of Future World, and World Showcase was a celebration of the imaginations and creativity of the people around the world. And Dreamfinder was, since he was the only character at Epcot Center, he represented all of that. And that wonderful ride that Tony Baxter and his people created had Dreamfinder creating Figment and to carry the message that imagination is something that belongs to all of us. And I think that that's what stuck with people even long after. It's been 18 years since that attraction was open. And people still remember it fondly and still remember the characters. I don't think it has really much to do with what I or any of the other strolling Dreamfinders did. It's a matter of what that ride meant to people, and I'm proud to be part of that memory.
Yeah, for me, Figment is a huge part of inspiration for me, because he was the only character at Epcot, the only place you could find Mickey Mouse then was on the puddle covers. Mm-hmm. And in my office, I have several Figment stuffed animals and art that various artists have. What do you think about Figment's legacy? Because I feel like Figment's on a comeback, not necessarily in the ride, but I feel like there's an uprising of Figment. Do you feel it with as you meet people at all of these
people out there?
Well, thanks to the pin collectors, he never really went away. But Jim Zub and the people at Marvel have done this amazing job with the Figment comic books. There have been 2 5-issue runs, and there's rumors of a third one coming, which has sold out amazingly fast both times, and so there's a renewed interest, and there are constant rumors that Figment with or without Dreamfinder is going to be put back in the park. The latest I've heard is that State is going to emphasize the steampunk element that they might appear, if not at Epcot, then possibly in the Magic Kingdom. And I'd love to see that happen. I'm aware, I'm always hearing people saying, bring back Dreamfinder. I'm a little leery of that, I've got to say, because of the job they did bringing Figment back and everyone demanded it. The ride was less than stellar. So I'm kind of leery about what they might do with Dreamfinder, but with people like Jim Zub, Marvel, and the quality of that particular piece of work, I'm eternally hopeful.
That's awesome. When it comes to people, obviously a lot of people lined up, get pictures with you, shake hands with you, take pictures with you, but this is probably not their first time. As I see your Facebook feed, it's full of people who got their picture with the Dreamfinder back when they were kids. Got to be a lot of you. A lot of you maybe didn't have the opportunities you got to tonight. What does that mean for you to see people that not only recognize the character, and that's great, but recognize you as someone who brought inspiration and joy to their lives? Because, again, I look at your Facebook feed, and a lot of it is these photos of people with you and with Figment.
When it's with me, yeah.
I was
only there for the first 5 years, from 1982 to 87. There's a young man named, well, not young anymore, named Steve Taylor. Steve was the number two fella hired, and he lasted for 15 years, and he's got the carpal tunnel syndrome to prove it. but it means a lot that we're remembered, and it means a lot that we got to play that character and create something that unique. Nobody had ever done a character like Dreamfinder with Disney before, and being the first one, I got to help write the book, and I'm terribly, terribly proud of that. I'm constantly being asked, is this you in the picture? Is this you in the picture? And you can usually tell if it's me in the picture, because if it's me, then Figment's looking right at the camera. That's one way of telling, and also this nose is unmistakable. Generally speaking, usually it's a picture of Steve.
For the people that don't know, Dreamfinder is just a small part of your career in theme parks. What is your backstory? Where did you come from when it comes to how that was? Again, you were a character in the park. That's awesome. But I know at least a little bit more. I've read your book. I know some of your history in the parks. What is your background in park entertainment, whether it's writing or whatever?
I'll try to make this as brief as possible.
Like in a minute and a half. You got it? No. Okay. Did you start at Disney?
I started in Southern California. I was born in 1952. I was at Disneyland the day it opened. My father did some of the original air conditioning work on the park. I grew up going to Disneyland. I was interested from an early age in magic, puppetry, and ventriloquism and performing. In 1966, when Walt passed away, I went to Disneyland, looked around. I realized, my gosh, this is a giant stage, and the stars of the show are the guests. I want to be a part of that. I saw the Wally Bogue at the Golden Horseshoe Review at Disneyland in 1970, and I decided that's what I wanted to do with my life. I spent the next 10 years at Six Flags Magic Mountain, Universal Studios, 1520 AD Medieval Restaurant, doing as many special events, learning as much as I could about the industry. In 1980, I got my dream job at the Golden Horseshoe Review, understudying Wally Bogue. I went over to Universal Studios as a creative manager. Then Disney brought me out here in 1982 to open Epcot Center as Dreamfinder. I was in charge of the celebrity lookalikes at Universal Studios when they opened out here.
Yeah.
And I've done a number of special events, theme restaurants and theme parks across North America in the 40 years. And that's why I wrote my book about.
Yeah. I know you're adding, is it a movie star to your, is there?
Yes, I just finished shooting a movie. It's called The Further Adventures of Walt's Frozen Head.
And you are?
And I'm playing Walt's Frozen Head.
Oh. How is that, and what's the update of that film? When are we going to see it?
It's a wonderful script. Otherwise, I would not have done this. It's kind of like a Frank Capra movie, a kind of cross between It's a Wonderful Life and Blackbeard's Ghost. And it's very respectful, but it's also very funny and very touching.
Yeah.
It's my head in a box. and it'll be out probably around February of next year. I was the voice of Dreamfinder in the ride for some of the ride, not all of it. Chuck McCann did most of it, and it's based on Frank Morgan, The Wizard of Oz. Chuck didn't record everything in the ride. I had to match him, so I did Skyrocket Soar Towards Outer Space. Imagine yourself in an infinite place. Figment's voice was Billy Barty. Very, very talented young man. They had a heck of a time casting Figment's voice. As a matter of fact, they created the character and they couldn't find a voice for him. They put posters up around the studio, in fact, with a drawing of Figment saying, "Have you seen my voice?" They tried all sorts of things, and it wasn't until Billy Barty walked in and gave them what he wanted immediately.
Your career in general, other than that, and I'm probably going to get booed for this for a moment, but we're in the Halloween season, and am I going to get booed for saying Universal Studios here? No? Okay. So you worked a little bit on Halloween Horror Nights.
I wrote all of the shows for the first Halloween Horror Nights when it was called Fright Nights.
Fright Nights.
The very first one, yeah.
The very first one. What was that like? Because what I've heard a lot about, talking with a lot of people that worked at Universal in those first few years compared to Disney, is it was kind of the Wild West. Did you experience that where it was just sort of like whatever you could come up with, it was like, all right, let's go with it?
Most definitely. Universal Studios was determined not to let the entertainment department run away with itself, so there was no entertainment department when Universal Studios opened. I heard about this before I went in, and I said, no entertainment department? No. All of the actors in the rides and shows, which were terrific, were run by operations. It was late in the game when they realized, oh, we got to have cartoon characters walking around, and we want celebrity lookalikes, so we'll throw them together, and you've done that before, you take care of it. So we were on our own, completely on our own, and when you, A, you're working for Universal, B, you've got characters like the Blues Brothers and the Marx Brothers, you can get away with murder, and we had an absolute ball because nobody was looking over our shoulder, and every time they looked at the Marx Brothers, they were cutting up and disrespecting everybody, and that's what they're supposed to be doing. So, it was a wild time for us until about the time that they changed the entire management team in entertainment, and then suddenly everybody cracked the whip, and we all kind of slithered off into the sunset.
Yeah, from the stories I hear, like Bill and Ted, anyone could show up in that show, and no one cared.
One of the things we love to do on the podcast is, at least myself, it's one of my favorite things, is to tell the world what we would do if we were in charge. What we would do if we were going to bring a ride back, or what we would do at Epcot.
Because we deserve that for some reason.
Because
we think we can make those calculated decisions.
Because we know they will never actually let us make those decisions, so we like to dream. So since you're the Mac Daddy of dreamers, mm-hmm. What if you could bring back Figment and then in Dreamfinder in any way, how would you like to see him come back?
Okay. I've given this some thought recently. You remember the original ride? Okay. And you remember the Dreamfinders flying along in the dream catching machine, collecting sparks of inspiration, and then he uses the things he collects in the first scene to create new things in the realm of art and literature and image technology and performing arts and science. In the redo of the ride I would build, you would be flying the dream catching machine. And there would be, because we got all these targeting things, all these shooting things, as you go through the first big room, there'd be sparks of inspiration, different concepts that would be floating through the air, and you would be shooting at them and sucking them up. Then you'd go through the same realms that you did in the original ride, but now you would take the concepts that you collected and you shoot them at things and change them by recombining them with the sparks you collected before. Imagination is the process of collecting, storing, and recombining. We take the same idea, collecting, storing, and recombining, but now instead of sitting and watching it happen, you'd be the ones doing it.
What do you guys think about that? Ron, well, we couldn't thank you enough for joining us here and celebrating, 45th of Walt Disney World, and obviously not too far off from Epcot as well. So, again, thank you so much for hopping down.
Thank you for putting this together and bringing all these acts together.
Hope to do it again.
And my congratulations, and just great meeting you all. And thank you. Goodbye.
All right. Thank you. Ron Schneider, the Dreamfinder. Guys, thank you again so much for coming out and celebrating. Tomorrow is the 45th anniversary of Walt Disney World, and we host WDW Today, a podcast. Has anyone heard our podcast? A good handful.
That's what I like to hear.
A few people.
So you can put faces with names. I'm Logan.
I'm Will.
And I'm Terry.
Don't we look good?
We should do that. We have what they call faces video. For radio or podcasting.
Speak for yourself, sir.
I just did. I said
that. Who all was here for the pre-show? A few of you? Come on. All right, well, you saw we had a very special guest, and he is someone who we worked hard. It was a very big surprise for everyone. Surprise, we worked hard to get him here, get him out of retirement. Are you guys ready?
This is his first event outside of a Disney park.
Yes, like it's a huge deal.
Huge deal. Like call your mom kind of deal.
Yeah, tell him to get out here. Well, this is not, they don't have time.
They're a little late.
They're too late. So let's bring, should we bring him out? Our very special guest. Push, the talking trash can.
Here he comes.
Should we meet? Where can we meet Push?
Let's just meet him in the middle.
Nope.
Push, be careful.
It's four-wheel drive.
Okay. I know this is out of my lighting zone, but I'm just going to do it anyway. So, can you see everything? Yes, fine.
What are you guys all doing here? Oh, my gosh, I'm sorry. I hope it wasn't me.
You look good, Push.
Thank you. There's a lot of folks here that I was talking to a little earlier, but there's also a lot of folks that I remember seeing before and talking to them at the past. And I really appreciate you guys coming to see me over the years.
You've been kind of in retirement right now, but we're happy to have you out here. Are you, Will, you got any questions?
Push. Yeah, I want to know, is Push your full name or is it just your stage name? Like, now you're in retirement. Can you tell us what your real name is?
Well, first of all, I'm not actually retired. I was thinking about taking up a career in politics.
Oh. Now's a good time,
Yeah,
Push.
I think we'd all vote for Push.
Now's a good time.
Somebody's going to clean this country up.
Push for president, everyone.
Make America push again.
I'm pretty sure we got to make the shirts.
We're making
the shirts will be on sale tonight after the show. Not really, but hopefully.
It actually is Push the Talking Trash Can is my whole name, but people just call me Push.
And it does say your full name on you. You are wearing that name.
He has ID.
So that was my mistake.
That's what they say, forget. My name is spelled P-U-U-S-H. That's just in case anybody wants to send me a Christmas card.
Where do we send Christmas cards to?
Well, everybody uses email now.
Okay.
Yeah. You can just send it to me on email.
Are you on Facebook? You look like you're trying to fend him off with that microphone. Be careful. It's a lightsaber battle with a trash can.
Well, it's kind of frightening. Are you on Facebook, Push? Can people Facebook message you?
I don't have Facebook.
Oh.
I have a face.
Oh, man.
You have to have a face to be on Facebook.
That's what I've been told, yes.
But maybe the other side that can't look.
Oh.
Do you guys want to come give me a big hug for a picture?
I think so.
Yeah. Should we hug?
We should hug. Can we touch? We can touch you, Push. It's okay? Because if this is your head, I don't want to be like, I don't want to feel you.
Yeah, this. Yeah.
Hey, we're going to do a photo op. I don't know what this is for. But hey,
everyone's taking everyone a just picture, which is fantastic. This is
photo op for your podcast.
Oh, that's what
it
is. Thank you, Push. I forgot.
Of course, you want everybody to be able to see it on your podcast.
We got starstruck for a moment there. That's not.
Maybe we should do a Push cast.
Oh, a push cast.
Look, if you want to, I'm sure, who would listen to a push cast?
Yeah.
Sir, are you a sir? You're a trash can. I'm guessing I'm going to go with your either or. People would listen to that podcast. I think that'd get in the top 10 to travel pretty quick. Or actually, what would you want to do a podcast on? Would you want to do travel? What would you like to do?
Well, maybe one day we could do a podcast together. That would be fun.
Anytime. Maybe you're
we're
on
all
it.
In.
Maybe you're on it right now. but thank you so much, Push.
By the way, everybody, if you guys want to see me in the park, sometime you could go to Disneyland Paris. I'll be there on a regular basis, and sometimes in Hong Kong Disneyland.
Very cool.
You travel quite a bit.
Yeah.
I had to get a passport.
Oh, yeah.
Push only flies first class.
We'll see you guys later. Thanks so much for coming.
Give it up for Push.
How about Push?
The talking trash can.
Yes, yes,
yes.
Our namesake, in case you didn't know and were as confused about it as most people, De Las Puertas comes from what? The end of the monorail spiel. That's right. Now I'm going to go back to where we're supposed to be. And thanks for everybody coming out. It's been an amazing experience to get all these bands back together. And okay.
What is happening right now?
Sir?
Hey, we're still doing
sir,
our
thing. We're still.
Excuse us. We're recording a podcast. Over
yeah,
here,
things that are important.
You're not bothering me.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah. Okay, well, all right, well.
Check. 1, 2.
Okay, should we just leave them alone? Should we just leave them alone?
I thought we did sound check earlier, but.
I was here for sound check. It already happened. Did you miss that? Actually, I think you did.
You did, actually. I've never seen you before. I'm not sure how you got on stage. Keep doing what you're doing.
All right.
We'll just...
All right, coming up later on, we got a lot of great bands. You know who they are.
1, 2.
All right, we're going to get up on stage now.
We're just going to leave.
And your next act will be up shortly, I believe. I want to take a quick break to tell you about something you may not know, and that is we have a store all full of Laugh-O-Gram merchandise. You may say, Logan, what's Laugh-O-Gram? Well, Laugh-O-Gram was Walt Disney's original studio, founded in 1921 in Kansas City. It's where he got started with him and Ub and a lot of the guys that went on to form the rest of animation history. So guys that helped create the Looney Tunes and so much more came straight out of this little tiny studio. It's where the inspiration of Mickey Mouse came from, and we actually now own this brand.
And if you've seen the movie As Dreamers Do, which I was up iWorks in,
yeah,
you'll actually know a lot more about this studio, Laugh-O-Gram.
Yeah, so we took it upon ourselves, because not only is it a great studio name for us, because we like to try new things, it was a great place where creativity was king, where they were trying new things, and that's exactly what we're doing here with Laugh-O-Gram Studios now. But the merchandise all reflects the original logo. You can find it there. It's at laughogramstore.com. One word, laughogramstore.com. And all the money that comes through really helps us make sure WDW Today, as well as other Laugh-O-Gram Studios podcasts, keep going each and every week. Again, shirts, hats, we got a lot of great stuff. I posted a picture on the 45th in front of the castle wearing my Laugh-O-Gram hat. A lot of people asked, where can I get that? Well, now I'm sure you can go get that at laughogramstore.com. I hope you guys liked that all from De Las Puertas. Hopefully we'll do it again next year or something like it. And if you did, let us know. Let us know that you enjoyed that. We obviously also had a pretty cool special guest. We had Push the Talking Trash Can. And it was awesome to have him, his first appearance outside of Walt Disney World. I know you guys loved him. He was our surprise guest and really stole the show early on. Came out during the pre-show, took pictures with people. It was awesome to have Push out there. And again, you never know what's going to happen at one of our events.
So folks, next year, if we're saying something like surprise guest, a lot of surprises, that typically is just because we can't get away with telling you beforehand.
Right.
But it's going to be something cool like Push.
Yeah, we couldn't say
when
it.
When people saw Push roll out, it was like one of those moments. You're like, is this really happening?
There were a couple people in tears.
Yeah, people were emotionally moved by that moment.
By that trash can.
Push even performed a wedding in the lobby.
He did.
I love that dang trash can.
All right, well, let's move on, because Terry did just get back from France right before De Las Puertas. So, Terry, you went to Disneyland Paris, then you went to De Las Puertas. They're going back to Disney in like 3 weeks. We want your life. So let's go hear the rest of Terry's trip report from Paris. All right, so to continue on Terry's trip report, hopefully you guys had a couple weeks there. I took a break here from talking trip reports. People like the trip reports. So
people love the trip
reports.
You
went to Disneyland Paris, which I know a lot of us don't have the opportunity to do it. I thankfully have been, but it's been about 8 or 9 years. Tell us about Disneyland Paris.
You know, I went into Disneyland Paris with knowing that it was different, that it was not Disneyland. So I really had lowered my expectations, just because I'd heard a lot of horror stories that it was a disrepair, and I knew that it was experiencing an overhaul.
Yeah.
And so when we went, we knew that a lot of attractions were down. But I was pleasantly surprised by Disneyland Paris.
You sound like you're about to cry.
No, in some ways I am, because it was absolutely beautiful. I mean, you walked into what Imagineering did. And some of it is just because I kind of had in my mind, okay, this is going to be run down. It's going to be
Six Flags.
So. It's going to be Six Flags, and like, I'm going to have this moment, like, yeah, what totally happened not. To Walt's leg? Yeah. But it was everything that, like, it seems like what Disney would do if they had an big bucket of money, because everything was perfect as far as, you know, the details. I knew going in that some of the rides just weren't the same,
right,
but the details, and I'm kind of an Imagineering junkie, as I know you are, and the little things and the experiences and the details were just over the top.
What were like your top three that just kind of were mind-blowing?
The new attraction for Ratatouille, which is, it almost feels like you go into the Walt Disney Studios park,
uh-huh,
which is where we started, because I wanted to...
It's kind of like their Hollywood Studios.
It's their Hollywood Studios, and it's really cool when you go through that park. You go through, like, you know, you and I have talked about the new theme park in Qatar. You go through like a building that's all inside.
Right.
And you kind of go through, it's got kind of a Brown Derby little quick service restaurant and a few shops. But you go to the back of the park and you go to almost what feels like France at Epcot, except for you're actually in France at the Ratatouille attraction. And there's a store, the ride architecture, and then a restaurant themed around Remy.
Hmm.
And it was just every section about that area was just over the top. The first thing we did was that ride, because I knew it was the one thing that was not at any of the theme parks in the States.
Right.
And you go in, you get in a giant mouse. And when you actually enter the ride, have you seen
like a car of a mouse?
A car, yeah, of a mouse.
Yeah.
So you kind of enter in, you kind of go through the queue, and you're sort of on the streets of Paris. But somehow you end up on the roof of the restaurant that, okay, Remy cooked in.
Yeah.
And so you kind of actually, the theme is you sort of fall into the restaurant cooking
like
with
in
Remy.
Like in the movie.
In the movie.
Yeah, yeah.
And, man, the I've never said wow so many times on a ride before in my life. Just because everything that happened was, in some ways it felt like you were on the Snow White ride and it felt nostalgic, but in some ways it felt like you were experiencing the Spider-Man ride at Universal.
Yeah, that's like based on your description. Was it now part practical effect, like actual things, and then part 3D? Or
it was, it was a 3D attraction, but yet there were still...
Things were there.
Yeah. Things were real. And that they did a great job of kind of mixing the fact that there's a giant bucket of potatoes and then there's a video screen of a kitchen.
Yeah.
The new architecture that they built for that ride really just gave you this seamless experience that you were immersed in Remy's kitchen. You were cooking with Remy. And the whole thing was just unbelievable. I hope that it comes to France.
French Pavilion.
Epcot
French France at Epcot, yeah.
It already is in France. Yes.
And then after that, we kind of hung out in that area, and we went to dine at the restaurant next to it, which, you know, like, okay, it's a French restaurant themed after Remy in France. It's going to be, you know, we've eaten at all the little bistros on the street, and the food was actually really great. So the theme of the restaurant is similar to the ride. Is you walk into the restaurant and like the tiles are like 12 by 12.
Yeah.
But you cross over this line and you're supposed to shrink down to the size of Remy again. So you're eating on corks. You're sitting on, you know, the wine bottles are giant. You're mouse size again.
Yeah.
And, you know, the lights in there are like Christmas lights. Absolutely just fantastic experience. The best themed dining thing I've ever been at in any Disney park. But that whole part was definitely one of the first things we did, and one of the highlights. We did the Art of Disney Animation and got to see our buddy Tom Bancroft. He's still alive and well over there.
Awesome. That's great. In 30.
in 30, yeah. So shout out to you, Tom, if you're listening to the show today. I wanted to do it just because I was like, I know Tom's got to be here.
Yeah, that's awesome. I didn't even think, does he speak French?
No. You put on a headset.
Okay.
And gotcha. So everybody gets their own language. So maybe there's someone speaking French in the French. I had the English version. We walked through the little Toy Story area, which was very similar to the Bug's Life area in California Adventure.
Yeah.
So they have a Toy Story area. We didn't do anything.
I feel like that was there when I was there.
Yeah, that was done really well and kind of gives me great hope of what's to come at Hollywood Studios.
Any other rides? Rock and Roller Coaster?
My little brother did Rock and Roller Coaster and was like, don't bother.
It's not near as good.
He's like, it's just a roller coaster in a lot of fog. And so we didn't do that. We didn't do the Tower of Terror. We went and kind of looked at the Tower of Terror. We only had a day. And so we wanted to, you know, we kind of wanted this just to spend, you know, as much time around. My little brother did the Crushes coaster. And so that was.
I loved that ride.
Yeah, he loved that ride.
Okay, good. So I'm not like just me and Dalton aren't going to like.
He's like, it's the best. Right? He feels the same way about that as I did about
blast.
Remy.
Blast. All right.
So that, you know,
that's Hollywood Studios, whatever you call it.
That kind of did it for Hollywood Studios.
Or Disney Studios.
And if they announce that the Ratatouille ride is coming to Epcot, cheer, yes. Thank your congressman, be excited about it, and let's hope it happens. But that park was, you know, kind of their afterthought. We didn't do any of the shows. I think my mom did the Cinemagique show and said it was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. I've heard good things.
But yeah, the park was absolutely beautiful. It was definitely small, that park, but it didn't feel like they phoned it in at all. It was a lot of fun.
Cool. All right. And then on to now, like, kind of like Disneyland, it's all connected. Downtown Disney kind of spans the two parks and you're able to easily walk across. Now, when I went to Disneyland Paris before, getting in was pretty hectic. How was it actually getting into the parks?
I was actually going to talk about that. Yeah. When you enter, everything is secure. There's a perimeter and everything. So when you actually enter Downtown Disney, you go through TSA,
right?
Airport security, which part of me thinks is we're in the near future of that coming to.
Yeah, especially with all the Paris things that happened. We don't know if kids are listening, you know, but you know, stuff that's happened in France over the last 12 months or 24 months even. You know, a lot of stuff has happened there, so you kind of get that.
Yeah, and it was weird to go to a Disney park and see guys with Uzis and M16s at the front gate, but yet it's sort of
comforting.
It was comforting because it was all of the major attractions in Europe had a military presence,
right.
And it sort of was like, okay, all is well. This is normal.
You're going to be safe.
You're going to be safe. And you know, for what that's just kind of the new reality of the new world we live in. But walked across the street after our lunch with Remy to go and walk down Main Street. And, you know, you walk through the Disneyland Hotel, under the Disneyland Hotel, to get into the park.
Right.
And it felt like the right thing to do. We rode the train around the park because that just feels like the Disney thing to do, to ride the train. So we rode the train around the park and then walked up Main Street. And, you know, Main Street was absolutely gorgeous. And they had all the Main Street vehicles up and running in the middle of the day, which if you go to Orlando, they rarely do.
Yeah, pretty much. By 9,
they're done. 45, yeah, they're done. And
I actually saw them for the first time in years back when my early trip this last month or July.
One of our priorities was to get under the castle. Mm-hmm. Because I knew about the dragon that Tony Baxter had actually designed for Disney World, but they never could figure out how to fit it under the castle. So that was super cool to see the dragon, the animatronics that were there. And the castle is by far the most breathtaking, especially for Sleeping Beauty's castle. It was definitely made Disneyland feel like, wow.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. It feels like a real French castle, storybook castle.
Yeah.
Is it your favorite castle?
I'm not one to rate castles, Will, but if I had to,
it's in the top three.
It was a fantastic castle. And you know what was amazing is it felt a lot like it was flower and garden there year round.
Yeah, I can see that.
My mother-in-law was just blown away by she loves the whole flower and garden thing. And she was it was just gorgeous. I mean, everything was trimmed and it looked like we were at a flower and garden show. It was just beautiful.
Rides. Let's get to some rides.
Rides. Small World was different, but wow.
I don't have much memory of it, so what do you mean?
It wasn't the typical Mary Blair kind of small world. It was a much darker color palette.
Okay.
And it was a little more...
For the French.
yeah. It was a little more sarcastic, almost. Like, there was a laughing hyena that came out of nowhere.
It's a socialist world, after all, is what they were actually... That was the literal translation. It was weird.
They're mocking It's a Small World throughout it. They're saying, you know, this is... we know this is garbage.
It's a parody.
The world is very big.
Yes, they're wrong.
I cannot walk around the world.
80 days. 80 days around the world.
Hot air balloon.
Hot air balloon around the world.
80 days around the world gives me such a crick in the neck.
French genie.
Yeah.
All right, continue.
Yeah.
Make that shirt French genie, by the way.
We loved It's a Small World. It was one of those rides that you went on and we just went on because it was like, okay, we'll go on this.
Higher weights.
We were on a Tuesday. There were literally no weights. We walked on everything. One of the weird thing was... there was a lot of things that I really wanted to check out that were closed. On the top of my list was Mr. Toad's Dining Hall.
Okay.
For Will, I wanted to experience that, but he was closed for the day.
I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah.
Bad gum.
They have a whole Mr. Toad's themed like quick service restaurant. The one thing we really wanted to do is we had planned on eating at Walt's for dinner that night, and it was closed that day. They tend to close things in 2 days to 3 days a week.
You're not missing a whole lot there. It's cool decorations, but the food, yeah, I mean, food is French-American version.
Yeah, you know, for sure. We just wanted to kind of see it.
Oh, it's cool. Kind of
Space Mountain 2.0 was everything that I had hoped for and more.
It's amazing.
Absolutely amazing. Why do we not...
I know.
We have the technology. Why do we not have this in...
It's... When I say this, what I mean it's superior to what we have at Disney World and Disneyland. Like, not even in the same realm of existence. There are moments where you stop, things collide with each other. It's a ride with awesome corkscrews and flips.
It's sort of like saying we replaced It's a Small World with Rock and Roller Coaster.
I could see that, yeah.
You know what I mean? And so it's...
You would not be... You nostalgia fans would not be mad once you got on Space Mountain Mission 2 or whatever it's called. You'd be blown away.
It was very... That whole area was very, like, steampunk. It was very, very cool.
I had no idea what we were getting ourselves into. We got on it. We were just blown away.
And it still had the nostalgic need to go to a chiropractor feel that you have every time you go to a Space Mountain attraction. But, yeah, that was... I would say that was a lot more thrilling than our version of Rock and Roller Coaster.
I'd agree. It's a better ride.
Yeah.
I'd say it's a better roller coaster and it's a better ride. Like, it has sort of some dark ride kind of elements to
it. I would say it's probably the best e-ticket thrill ride attraction in Disney theme parks. Space Mountain 2.0.
Thrill ride, I'd agree.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it was.
That I've been on. We haven't been, obviously, like, Tron. Tron maybe better.
We gotta go to Tron.
I know.
Someone
sent us to Tron.
We need some sponsors that are just Shanghai sponsors.
I'll be sponsored
by the Chinese government.
We need Alibaba to come
to fund
fund
this show. You guys made Ninja Turtles 2. You can
send three lowly podcasters on a trip to Shanghai.
Yes, like what Will said, and our families and friends, like a group of 20. That's what we do. Okay, listeners too. All right, go ahead.
We of course did Dumbo. That was one of my favorite things. I got both of my moms, Leslie's mom and my mom, on the Dumbo attraction, and Mark and the Dumbo rides off around the world. That was a lot of fun, and there was a lot of things down every time there was, as I mentioned, a list of questions.
So that's where it isn't like Disney World.
Like I was going to say, the mechanics at Disneyland Paris are the ones maintaining old Frozen the ride.
Yeah. the pirates. The rest of my family did get to ride pirates. I did not, but it was down when we went to go ride it because we couldn't get Walt. We booked Blue Bayou, and I was like, well, fine, we'll do Blue Bayou, and then end the day at pirates, and you know that they're. Their version of Haunted Mansion, Phantom Manor. A couple things about Phantom Manor. The major bummer overall about Disneyland Paris was the lack of merchandise.
Yes.
Because this was the point of the show where I was prepared to bring back awesome gifts for you and Will from Disneyland Paris. And I was completely prepared to load you up with Phantom Manor merchandise.
Nothing.
Zilch. Zero.
I have a Haunted Mansion from Paris snow globe, but that's all I have.
Nothing.
It's pretty awesome, though.
Yeah.
So, Phantom Manor.
You walk up to Phantom Manor.
It's the psycho house.
And before you get in it, you are scared out of your mind.
Like, it's actually frightening.
It's actually the
and this is where I talk about that Imagineering went, like, over the top.
Yeah.
Is the landscaping outside of the building. I took a couple of pictures. Like, I got the good camera out. I was like, I got to capture this. The landscaping outside the building is the scariest of any. Like, all of the bushes.
Scariest landscaping.
All of the bushes are very, they're gnarly and they're thorny. And it just, it's very like, wow, they really like thought of everything.
It's the opposite of the way Disneyland does it. And even somewhat Disney World, which is to not really make the outside appear spooky.
And you get to the door, and we encountered a fantastic greeter who was,
and that is cool there. You actually walk through the front door.
You walk through the front
unlike
door.
You're walking underneath to the stretching room. Like, you walk straight in, essentially the psycho house. Like, it looks so much like the psycho
you
house.
Get greeted by the doorman, and the doorman who was in character was fantastic, and we got our whole family on the ride, and you know, it insanely dark. You go into the stretching room.
Yeah.
And it was just,
and the ride itself,
the ride itself was a lot different. You know, obviously you're missing the graveyard scene.
Yeah.
You still had the grim grinning ghosts. But yeah, the whole thing was just
missing a lot of humor.
It was much darker.
Yeah.
But the ride itself was super impressive. The sad part about where the ride was is nothing else was functional because the Big Thunder was down. Almost all of Frontier was under some sort of, you know, the Steamboat was down. But yeah, the whole park was just, the fact that they cared as much as they did about the trees in front of the Phantom Manor.
Okay, more about the trees than they do the rides, it seems like.
Well, maybe the landscaping guys are making more than the ride engineers.
All right, so what else we got?
The castle show.
Okay.
The end of the day. And you and I were in a conference where we got to, I think you had left before the guy that designed that show. Steve Davison, who's a Disney show guy. I heard him talk about that, so we were kind of prepared. And I knew it was not like Disney. I knew it wasn't fireworks, quote-unquote.
Right.
It had firework elements, but I knew it was sort of a show that they designed to be wow, but not necessarily to be a huge budget, because obviously they don't have the attendance that Disney World would have. But the show was the projection show before fireworks, yeah. And mixed with pyro and fireworks. The whole theme of the show is Peter Pan loses his shadow, and the storyline was great. The whole thing, you kind of go through all of Peter Pan's shadow, kind of floats through all the stories throughout Europe. So you end up with Merida and Brave, and you end up, you know, in the castles and the love stories and the
cool.
But the end of the day kiss goodnight show finale, you know, their version of Wishes was not like fireworksy. But yet was the, you know, I know Riker loves the like castle projection, so he would have absolutely
It's a great show.
The show was over the top. One of the better shows for sure too.
All right, that sounds awesome.
Yeah.
Any other attractions? Did you hit the Indiana Jones thing?
Didn't hit the Indiana Jones thing because
it's not much. It's just a one flip roller coaster.
We skipped intentionally, knowing the things that people were like, skip it. You know, when you only have one day, there's only so much. And we kind of wanted to stick our head and look in all the little, you know, the little things.
Yeah, it's not. It wasn't really that worth it.
But the Phantom Manor was definitely a highlight. Remy was definitely a highlight. Space Mountain 2.0 for sure. And then, you know, the closing show. I was really bummed about not getting to do the Toad Hall restaurant because it just felt like, you know, what would Will Haynes do? It felt like Will would have been there hanging up and just sitting in a corner with a, you know, a glass of one cube of ice and
a glass of a cube of ice, just a cube of ice. Do they sell alcohol? Do they sell alcohol at that Disneyland?
Yes.
They do.
Yes.
In the park.
In the park.
That's a little weird. It's got to feel weird.
Because we had cocktails at the at Blue Bayou.
There you go. Something to know. All right. So for people going to Paris that are listening to this podcast, worth it to go out to Disneyland for the day?
Absolutely.
Okay. I think you're right.
And it's, you know, I would say,
How'd you get there? Just drive.
There's a couple ways to get there. You can take the
Eurostar,
TGV,
right? Yeah,
TGV, which is the speed train.
Right.
And that was what we were going to do. And they said that it takes about 10 minutes, but it's normally delayed by an hour. So we looked into getting just a private driver, and it was cheaper for us to just do that. The RER also, which is kind of the basic train, also from Paris, gets you out there. And then there's several shuttles that run from both of the airports. It's really easy to get there. There's tons of places to stay. Our one-day, two-park ticket, U.S. dollars, were $53.
Right.
We definitely got $53 worth out of the park.
That may be the only thing in Europe that's cheaper there than here to do.
Like by half.
Right. No, I'm just saying, like, food, drink,
hotels,
everything that you can do in Europe, that going to the park may be the only thing that's cheaper there than here.
Well, did we cover your Disneyland trip? Anything else from Paris you want to touch on before we wrap this thing up?
We went to the top of the Eiffel Tower.
The old standard.
The old standard. We just did the super touristy things. And
you got it.
We did the river cruise down the river. We did Notre Dame. We did, you know, the Louvre.
Well, I think it's going to do it. Anything else?
It'll do it.
All right.
Bonjour.
Enjoy your time at Disneyland Paris. If you go, let us know if you go.
Is bonjour goodbye as well?
Bonjour.
Bonjour. It felt like...
No.
Yeah, I think it's just hello.
What's goodbye?
I don't know.
It's on the top.
Au revoir.
Au revoir.
Yeah, but Terry said, you said, no, we're done. Bonjour.
All right, that's going to do it for this special episode of WDW Today. I hope you guys enjoy it. Back to your regularly scheduled episodes next week. We're going to give our trip reports, I think, of what happened, what we all did outside of De Las Puertas during our trip to Disney World. All right, that's going to do it. I'm Logan Seculo.
I'm Will Haynes.
And I'm Terry Weaver.
And I forgot to say special thanks to Off Kilter, the greatest band in podcasting, and go to Neverland.com for all your vacation needs and LaughogramStore.com to buy your Laughogram official merchandise. We'll see you on the next show.